At last, one morning, to my intense astonishment and joyful confusion, the little princess came back upstairs. At first she threw herself on Madame Léotard's neck with a wild laugh and announced that she had come back to live with us again. Then she nodded to me, asked to be excused lessons that morning, and spent the whole morning frolicking and racing about. I had never seen her livelier and merrier. But towards evening she grew quiet and dreamy, and again a sort of sadness seemed to overshadow her charming little face. When her mother came in the evening to have a look at her, I saw that Katia made an unnatural effort to seem gay. But after her mother had gone, she suddenly burst into tears. I was much impressed. Katia noticed my attention and went out of the room. In short, she was working up to some sudden crisis. Her mother was consulting doctors and every day sent for Madame Léotard to question her minutely about Katia, and told her to watch over all her actions. Only I had a foreboding of the truth, and my heart beat with hope. In short, my little romance was reaching its denouement. The third day after Katya's return to our floor, I noticed that she was looking at me all the morning with a wonderful light in her eyes, with a long, persistent gaze. Several times I met that gaze, and each time we both blushed and cast down our eyes, as though we were ashamed. At last, the little princess burst out laughing and walked away. It struck three, and we had to dress to go out.
"Your shoe's untied," she said to me. "Let me tie it."
I was bending down to tie it up myself, turning as red as a cherry at Katya's having at last spoken to me.
"Let me do it,"
she said impatiently, and she laughed. She bent down on the spot, took my foot by force, set it on her knee, and tied the lace. I was breathless. I did not know what to do from a sort of sweet terror. When she had finished tying the shoe, she stood up and scrutinized me from head to foot.
"Your neck is too open," she said,
touching the bare skin of my neck with her little finger.
"There, let me wrap it up."
I did not oppose her. She untied my neckerchief and retied it in her own fashion.
"Or you may get a cough,"
she said with a sly smile, flashing her black shining eyes upon me. I was beside myself. I did not know what was happening to me and what was happening to Katya. But thank goodness our walk was soon over, or I should not have been able to restrain myself and should have rushed to kiss her in the street. As we went up the stairs, however, I succeeded in stealthily kissing her on the shoulder. She noticed it, started, but said nothing. In the evening she was dressed up and taken downstairs. Her mother had visitors. But there was a strange commotion in the house that evening. Katya had a nervous attack. Her mother was beside herself with alarm. The doctor came and did not know what to say. Of course, it was all put down to Katya's age, but I thought otherwise. Next morning Katya made her appearance the same as ever, rosy and in good spirits, full of inexhaustible health, but of whims and caprices such as she had never had before. In the first place, all that morning she disregarded Madame Léotard altogether. Then she suddenly wanted to go and see her old aunt. Contrary to her usual practice, the old lady, who could not endure her niece, was in continual conflict with her and did not care to see her, on this occasion, for some reason, consented to see her. At first everything went well, and for the first hour they got on harmoniously. At first the little rogue asked her aunt's forgiveness for all her misdeeds, for her noisy play, for her shouting and disturbing her aunt. The old lady solemnly and with tears in her eyes forgave her. But the mischievous girl would go too far. She took it into her head to tell her aunt about pranks which were so far only in the stage of schemes and projects. Katya affected to be very meek and penitent, and to be very sorry for her sins. In short, the old fanatic was highly delighted, and her vanity was greatly flattered at the prospect of dominating Katya, the treasure and idol of the whole house, who could make even her mother gratify her whims. And so the naughty chit confessed, in the first place, that she had intended to pin a visiting card on her aunt's dress, then that she had planned to hide Falstaff under her bed, and then to break her spectacles, to carry off all her aunt's books, and put French novels from her mother's room in place of them, and to throw bits of flock all over the floor, then to hide a pack of cards in her aunt's pocket, and so on. In fact, she told her aunt of prank after prank, each worse than the last. The old lady was beside herself. She turned pale and then red with anger. At last, Katya could not keep it up any longer. She burst out laughing and ran away from her aunt. The old lady promptly sent for the child's mother. There was a fearful to-do, and the princess spent a couple of hours imploring her aunt with tears in her eyes to forgive Katya, to allow her not to be punished, and to take into consideration that the child was ill. At first the old lady would listen to nothing. She declared that next day she should leave the house, and was only softened when the princess promised that she would only put off punishment till her daughter was well again, and then would satisfy the just indignation of the old lady. Katya, however, received a stern reprimand. She was taken downstairs to her mother. But the rogue positively tore herself away after dinner. Making my way downstairs, I met her on the staircase. She opened the door and called Falstaff. I instantly guessed that she was plotting a terrible vengeance. The fact was that her old aunt had no more irreconcilable enemy than Falstaff. He was not friendly with anyone, he liked no one, but he was proud, haughty, and conceited in the extreme. He did not like anyone, but unmistakably insisted on being treated with due respect by all. Everyone felt it for him, indeed, mixed with a not uncalled-for terror. But all at once, with the arrival of the old lady, everything was changed. Falstaff was cruelly insulted. In other words, he was definitely forbidden to go upstairs. At first Falstaff was frantic with resentment, and spent the whole day scratching at the door at the bottom of the stairs that led to the upper story. But he soon guessed the cause of his banishment, and the first Sunday that the old lady went out to church, Falstaff dashed at the poor lady, barking shrilly. It was with difficulty that they rescued her from the furious vengeance of the offended dog, for he had been banished by the orders of the old princess, who declared that she could not endure the sight of him. From that time forward, Falstaff was sternly forbidden to go upstairs, and when the old lady came downstairs, he was chased into the farthest room. The sternest injunctions were laid upon the servants, but the revengeful brute found means on three occasions to get upstairs. As soon as he reached the top, he ran through the whole chain of apartments till he came to the old princess's bedroom. Nothing could restrain him. Fortunately, the old lady's door was always closed, and Falstaff confined himself to howling horribly before it till the servants ran up and chased him downstairs. During the whole time of the terrible bulldog's visit, the old lady screamed as though she were being devoured by him, and each time became really ill from terror. She had several times sent an ultimatum to the princess, and even came to the point of saying that either she or Falstaff must leave the house. But Katya's mother would not consent to part with Falstaff. The princess was not fond of many people, and, after her children, Falstaff was dearer to her than anyone in the world, and the reason was this. One day, 6 years before, the prince had come back from a walk, bringing with him a sick and muddy puppy of the most pitiful appearance, though he was a bulldog of the purest breed. The prince had somehow saved him from death. But as this newcomer was extremely rude and unmannerly in his behaviour, he was at the instance of the princess banished to the backyard and put on a cord. The prince did not oppose this. 2 years later, when all the family were staying at a summer villa, little Sasha, Katya's younger brother, fell into the Neva. His mother uttered a shriek, and her first impulse was to fling herself into the water after her son. She was with difficulty kept back from certain death. Meanwhile, the child was being rapidly carried away by the current, and only his clothes kept him afloat. They began hurriedly unmooring a boat, but to save him would have been a miracle. All at once, a huge, gigantic bulldog leapt into the water across the path of the drowning child, caught him in his teeth, and swam triumphantly with him to the bank. The princess flew to kiss the wet and muddy dog, but Falstaff, who at that time bore the prosaic and plebeian name of Fricks, could not endure caresses from anyone, and responded to the lady's kisses and embraces by biting her shoulder. The princess suffered all her life from the wound, but her gratitude was unbounded. Falstaff was taken into the inner apartments, cleansed, washed, and decorated with a silver collar of fine workmanship. He was installed in the princess's study on a magnificent bearskin, and soon the princess was able to stroke him without risk of immediate punishment. She was horrified when she learned that her favourite was called Frix, and immediately looked for a new name as ancient as possible. But such names as Hector, Cerberus, etc., were too hackneyed. A name was sought which would be perfectly suitable for the pet of the family. At last the prince proposed calling the dog Falstaff, on the ground of his preternatural veracity. The name was accepted with enthusiasm, and the bulldog was always called that. Falstaff behaved well. Like a regular Englishman, he was taciturn, morose, and never attacked anyone till he was touched. He only insisted that his place on the bearskin should be regarded as sacred, and that he should be shown fitting respect in general. Sometimes he seemed to have something like an attack of hysterics, as though he were overcome by the spleen, and at such moments Falstaff remembered with bitterness that his foe, his irreconcilable foe, who had encroached upon his rights, was still unpunished. Then he made his way stealthily to the staircase that led to the upper story, and, finding the door as usual closed, lay down somewhere not far from it, hid in a corner, and craftily waited till someone should be careless and leave the door open. Sometimes the vengeful beast would lie in wait for 3 days. But strict orders had been given to keep watch over the door, and for 3 months Falstaff had not got upstairs.
"Falstaff! Falstaff!"
cried Katya, opening the door and coaxingly beckoning the dog to come to us on the stairs. At that very time, Falstaff, with his instinctive feeling that the door would be opened, was preparing to leap across his Rubicon, but Katya's summons seemed to him so impossible that for some time he resolutely refused to believe his ears. He was as sly as a cat, and not to show that he noticed the heedless opening of the door, went up to the window, laid his powerful paws on the window-sill, and began gazing at the building opposite. Behaved, in fact, like a man quite uninterested who has gone out for a walk and stopped for a minute to admire the fine architecture of a neighbouring building. Meanwhile, his heart was throbbing and swooning in voluptuous expectation. What was his amazement, his joy, his frantic joy, when the door was flung wide open before him, and not only that, but he was called, invited, besought to go upstairs and wreak his just vengeance. Whining with delight, he showed his teeth, and, terrible, triumphant, darted upstairs like an arrow. His impetus was so great that a chair that happened to be in his way was sent flying and overturned 7 feet away. Falstaff flew like a cannonball. Madame Leotard uttered a shriek of horror, but Falstaff had already dashed to the forbidden door, was beating upon it with both paws, but could not open it, and howled like a lost soul. He was answered by a fearful scream from the old maid within. But a whole legion of enemies was flocking from all quarters, the whole household was moving upstairs, and Falstaff, the ferocious Falstaff, with a muzzle deftly popped over his jaws, with all his 4 limbs tied up, was ingloriously withdrawn from the field of battle, and led downstairs with a noose around him. An envoy was sent to his mistress. On this occasion the princess was in no mood for forgiving and showing mercy, but whom could she punish? She guessed at once, in a flash. Her eyes fell upon Katya. That was it. Katya stood pale and trembling with fear. It was only now that she realized, poor child, the results of her mischief. Suspicion might fall upon the servants, on innocent people, and Katya was already preparing to tell the whole truth. "Are you responsible?" her mother asked sternly. I saw Katya's deadly pallor, and, stepping forward, I pronounced in a resolute voice, "It was I let Falstaff in. By accident," I added, for all my courage vanished before the princess's threatening eyes.
"Madame Léotard, give her an exemplary punishment," said the princess, and she walked out of the room.
I glanced at Katia. She stood as though thunderstruck. Her hands hung down at her sides. Her little blanched face was looking down.
The only punishment that was made use of for the prince's children was being shut up in an empty room. To stay for 2 hours in an empty room was nothing. But when a child is put there by force, against its will, and told it is deprived of freedom, the punishment is considerable. As a rule, Katia and her brother were shut up for 2 hours. In view of the enormity of my offence, I was shut up for 4. Faint with delight, I entered my black hole. I thought about Katia. I knew that I had won her. But instead of being there 4 hours, I was there till 4 o'clock in the morning. This is how it happened. 2 hours after I had been put in confinement, Madame Léotard learned that her daughter had arrived from Moscow, had been taken ill, and wanted to see her. Madame Léotard went off, forgetting me. The maid who had looked after us probably took for granted that I had been released. Katia was sent for downstairs and obliged to stay with her mother till 11 o'clock in the evening. When she came back, she was very much surprised that I was not in bed. The maid undressed her and put her to bed, but Katia had her reasons for not inquiring about me. She got into bed expecting me to come, knowing for a fact that I had been shut up for 4 hours, and expecting me to be brought by our nurse. But Nastya forgot me entirely, the more readily as I always undressed myself, and so I was left to spend the night in prison. At 4 o'clock in the night, I heard someone knocking and trying to break in. I was asleep, lying anyhow on the floor. When I awoke, I cried out with terror, but at once recognized Katia's voice, which rang out above all the rest. Then the voice of Madame Léotard, then of the frightened Nastya, then of the housekeeper. At last the door was opened, and Madame Léotard hugged me with tears in her eyes, begging me to forgive her for having forgotten me. I flung myself on her neck in tears. I was shivering with cold, and all my bones ached from lying on the bare floor. I looked for Katia, but she had run into our bedroom, leapt into bed, and when I went in she was already asleep, or pretending to be. She had accidentally fallen asleep while waiting for me in the evening, and had slept on till 4 o'clock in the morning. When she woke, she had made a fuss, a regular uproar, in fact, wakened Madame Léotard, who had returned, our nurse, all the maids, and released me. In the morning the whole household knew of my adventure. Even the princess said that I had been treated too severely. As for the prince, I saw him that day for the first time moved to anger. He came upstairs at 10 o'clock in the morning in great excitement.
"Upon my word," he began to Madame Léotard, "what are you about? What a way to treat the poor child! It's barbarous, simply barbarous, savage! A delicate, sick child, such a dreamy, timid little girl, so imaginative, and you shut her in a dark room all night? Why, it is ruining her! Don't you know her story?" It's barbarous, it's inhuman, I tell you, madam. And how is such a punishment possible? Who could have invented such a punishment?
Poor Madame Léotard, with tears in her eyes, began in confusion explaining how it had all happened, how she had forgotten me, how her daughter had arrived, but that the punishment in itself was good if it did not last too long, and that Jean-Jacques Rousseau, indeed, said something of the sort.
"Jean-Jacques Rousseau, madame? But Jean-Jacques Rousseau could not have said that. Jean-Jacques is no authority. Jean-Jacques Rousseau should not have dared to talk of education. He had no right to do so. Jean-Jacques Rousseau abandoned his own children, madame. Jean-Jacques Rousseau was a bad man, madame."
"Jean-Jacques Rousseau! Jean-Jacques a bad man? Prince! Prince! What are you saying?"
And Madame Léotard flared up. Madame Léotard was a splendid woman, and above all things disliked hurting anyone's feelings. But touch one of her favourites, trouble the classic shades of Corneille or Racine, insult Voltaire, call Jean-Jacques Rousseau a bad man, call him a barbarian, and, good heavens,
Tears came into Madame Léotard's eyes, and the old lady trembled with excitement.
"You are forgetting yourself, Prince," she said at last,
beside herself with agitation. The prince pulled himself up at once and begged her pardon, then came up to me, kissed me with great feeling, made the sign of the cross over me, and left the room.
"Pauvre prince,"
said Madame Léotard, growing sentimental in her turn. Then we sat down to the schoolroom table. But Katia was very inattentive at her lessons. Before going into dinner, she came up to me, looking flushed, with a laugh on her lips, stood facing me, seized me by the shoulders, and said hurriedly, as though ashamed,
"Well, you were shut up for a long time for me, weren't you? After dinner, let us go and play in the drawing-room."
Someone passed by, and Katia instantly turned away from me. In the dusk of evening we went down together to the big drawing-room, hand in hand. Katia was much moved and breathless with excitement. I was happy and joyful as I had never been before.
"Would you like a game of ball?" she said. "Stand here."
She set me at one corner of the room, but instead of walking away and throwing the ball to me, she stopped, 3 steps from me, glanced at me, flushed crimson, and sank on the sofa, hiding her face in both hands. I made a movement towards her. She thought that I meant to go away.
"Don't go, Nyetochka. Stay with me," she said. "I shall be all right in a minute."
But in a flash she had jumped up from her place, and flushed and in tears, flung herself on my neck. Her cheeks were wet, her lips were swollen like cherries, her curls were in disorder. She kissed me as though she were frantic. She kissed my face, eyes, lips, neck, and hands. She sobbed as though she were in hysterics. I hugged her tight, and we embraced each other sweetly, joyfully, like friends, like lovers who had met after a long separation. Katya's heart beat so violently that I could hear every throb. But we heard a voice in the next room. Katya was called to go to her mother. She kissed me for the last time, quietly, silently, warmly, and flew from me at Nastya's call. I ran upstairs as though I had risen from the dead, flung myself on the sofa, hid my face in the pillow, and sobbed with rapture. My heart was thumping as though it would burst in my chest. I don't know how I existed until the night. At last it struck 11, and I went to bed. Katya did not come back till 12. She smiled at me from a distance, but did not say a word. Nastya began undressing her slowly, as though on purpose.
Make haste, Nastya,"
Katya muttered.
"What's the matter with you, princess? Have you been running upstairs that your heart beats so?"
Nastya inquired.
"Oh, dear, how tiresome you are, Nastya. Make haste, make haste."
And Katya stamped on the floor in her vexation.
"Ah, what a little heart," said Nastya,
kissing the little foot from which she was taking off the shoe. At last everything was done. Katya got into bed, and Nastya went out of the room. Instantly Katya jumped out of bed and flew to me. I cried out as she came to me.
"Get into my bed, sleep with me," she said, pulling me out of bed.
A minute later I was in her bed. We embraced and hugged each other eagerly. Katya kissed and kissed me.
"Ah, I remember how you kissed me in the night," she said,
flushing as red as a poppy. I sobbed.
"Nyetochka," whispered Katya through her tears, "my angel, I have loved you for so long, for so long. Do you know since when?" "Since when?" "Ever since father told me to beg your pardon that time when you stood up for your father, Nyetochka, my little forlorn one," she said, showering kisses on me again. She was crying and laughing together. "Oh, Katya! Oh, what? Oh, what? Why have we waited so long? So long?" And I could not go on. We hugged each other and said nothing for 3 minutes. "Listen, what did you think of me?" asked Katya. "Oh, "'What a lot I thought about you, Katya. "'I have been thinking about you all the time. "'I thought about you day and night. "'And at night you talked about me. "'Really? "'You cried ever so many times. "'I say, why were you so proud all the time? "'Oh, I was stupid, you know, Nyatochka. "'It comes upon me, and then it's all over with me. "'I was angry with you. "'What for?' "'Because I was horrid. "'First because you were better than I was, "'and then because Father loves you more than me. "'And Father is a kind man, Nyatochka, isn't he?' "'Oh, yes,' I said, thinking with tears of the prince. "'He's a good man,' said Katya gravely. "'But what am I to do with him? "'He's always so... "'Well, then I asked your forgiveness, and I almost cried.' "'And that made me cross again. "'And I saw that you wanted to cry. "'Well, hold your tongue, you little silly. "'You're a crybaby yourself,' Katya exclaimed, "'putting her hand over my mouth. "'Listen, I very much wanted to like you, "'and then all at once began to want to hate you. "'And I did hate you so. "'I did hate you so. "'What for? "'Oh, because I was cross with you. "'I don't know what for.' And then I saw that you couldn't live without me, and I thought, oh, I'll torment her, the horrid thing. Oh, Katya, my darling, said Katya, kissing my hand. Then I wouldn't speak to you, I wouldn't for anything. But do you remember how I stroked Falstaff? Ah, oh, you fearless girl. Wasn't I frightened? Katya drawled. Do you know why I went up to him? "'Why? Why, you were looking at me. "'When I saw that you were looking, "'ah, come what may, I would go up to him. "'I gave you a fright, didn't I? "'Were you afraid for me? "'Horribly! "'I saw, and how glad I was that Falstaff went away. "'Goodness, how frightened I was afterwards when he had gone. "'The monster!' "'And the little princess broke into an hysterical laugh.' Then she raised her feverish head and looked intently at me. Tears glistened like little pearls on her long eyelashes. "'Why, what is there in you that I should have grown so fond of you? "'Ah, you poor little thing with your flaxen hair! "'You silly little thing! "'Such a cry-baby with your little blue eyes! "'My little orphan girl!' "'And Katya bent down to give me countless kisses again.' A few drops of her tears fell on my cheeks. She was deeply moved. How I loved you! But still I kept thinking, no, no, I won't tell her. And you know how obstinate I was. What was I afraid of? Why was I ashamed of you? Oh, see how happy we are! Katya, how it hurt me, I said in a frenzy of joy. It broke my heart. "'Yes, Nyatochka, listen. "'Yes, listen. "'Who gave you your name, Nyatochka?' "'Mother. "'You must tell me about your mother.' "'Everything, everything,' I answered rapturously. "'And where have you put those two handkerchiefs of mine "'with lace on them? "'And why did you carry off my ribbon? "'Ah, you shameless girl! "'I know all about it.' "'I laughed and blushed till tears came. "'No,' I thought, I will torment her, let her wait. And at other times, I thought, I don't like her a bit, I can't bear her. And you are always such a meek little thing, my little lamb. And how frightened I was that you would think me stupid. You are clever, Nyatochka, you are very clever, aren't you? What do you mean, Katya? I answered, almost offended. No, you are clever, said Katya, gravely and resolutely. "'I know that. "'Only I got up one morning and felt awfully fond of you. "'I had been dreaming of you all night. "'I thought I would ask Mother to let me live downstairs. "'I don't want to like her. I don't want to. "'And the next night I woke up and thought, "'If only she would come as she did last night. "'And you did come. "'Ah, how I pretended to be asleep. "'Ah, what shameless creatures we are, Nyatochka.' "'But why did you want not to like me?' "'I don't know. But what nonsense I am talking. I liked you all the time. I always liked you. It was only afterwards I could not bear you. I thought, I will kiss her one day, or else I will pinch her to death. There's one for you, you silly. And the little princess pinched me. And do you remember my tying up your shoe? Yes, I remember. I remember. Were you pleased? I looked at you. What a sweet darling, I thought. If I tie up her shoe, what will she think? But I was happy, too. And do you know, really, I wanted to kiss you. But I didn't kiss you. And then it seemed so funny. So funny. And when we were out on our walk together, all the way I kept wanting to laugh. I couldn't look at you. It was so funny. And how glad I was that you went into the black hole for me.
The empty room was called the Black Hole.
And were you frightened? Horribly frightened. I wasn't so glad at your saying you did it, but I was glad that you were ready to be punished for me. I thought, she is crying now, but how I love her. Tomorrow how I will kiss her, how I will kiss her. And I wasn't sorry, I really wasn't sorry for you, though I did cry. But I didn't cry, I was glad. You didn't cry? Ah, you wicked girl, cried Katya, fastening her little lips upon me. Katya, Katya, oh dear, how lovely you are. Yes, am I not? Well, now you can do what you like to me. My tyrant, pinch me. Please pinch me. My darling, pinch me. You silly. Well, what next? Idiot. And what next? Why, kiss me.
And we kissed each other, cried, laughed, and our lips were swollen with kissing.
Netochka, to begin with, you are always to sleep with me. Are you fond of kissing? And we will kiss each other. Then I won't have you be so depressed. Why were you so depressed? You'll tell me, won't you? I will tell you everything. But I am not sad now, but happy. No, you are to have rosy cheeks like mine. Oh, if tomorrow would only come quickly. Are you sleepy, Netochka? No. Well, then, let's talk.
And we chatted away for another 2 hours. Goodness knows what we didn't talk about. To begin with, the little princess unfolded all her plans for the future and explained the present position of affairs. And so I learned that she loved her father more than anyone, almost more than me. Then we both decided that Madame Léotard was a splendid woman and that she was not at all strict. Then we settled what we would do the next day and the day after and, in fact, planned out our lives for the next 20 years. Katya decided that we should live in this way. One day she would give me orders and I should obey, and the next day it should be the other way round. I should command and she would obey unquestioningly, and so we should both give orders equally, and that if either disobeyed on purpose, we would first quarrel just for appearances and then make haste to be reconciled. In short, an infinity of happiness lay before us. At last we were tired of our prattling. I could not keep my eyes open. Katya laughed at me and called me sleepyhead, but she fell asleep before I did. In the morning we woke up at the same moment, hurriedly kissed because someone was coming in, and I only just had time to scurry into my bed. All day we did not know what to do for joy. We were continually hiding and running away from everyone, dreading other people's eyes more than anything. At last I began telling her my story. Katya was distressed to tears by what I told her.
You wicked, wicked girl! Why didn't you tell me all this before? I should have loved you so. And did the boys in the street hurt you when they hit you? Yes, I was so afraid of them. Oh, the wretches! Do you know, Netochka, I saw a boy beating another in the street. Tomorrow I'll steal Falstaff's whip, and if I meet one like that, I'll give him such a beating.
Her eyes were flashing with indignation. We were frightened when anyone came in. We were afraid of being caught kissing each other. And we kissed each other that day at least 100 times. So that day passed, and the next,
I was afraid that I should die of rapture. I was breathless with joy. But our happiness did not last long. Madame Léotard had to report all the little princess's doings. She watched us for 3 days, and during those 3 days she gathered a great deal to relate. At last she went down to Katia's mother and told her all that she had observed, that we both seemed in a sort of frenzy, that for the last 3 days we had been inseparable, that we were continually kissing, crying and laughing like lunatics, and that like lunatics we babbled incessantly, that there had been nothing like this before, that she did not know to what to attribute it. But she fancied that the little princess was passing through some nervous crisis, and finally that she believed that it would be better for us to see each other more seldom.
"I have thought so for a long time," answered the princess. "I knew that queer little orphan would give us trouble. The things I have been told about her life in the past, awful, really awful. She has an unmistakable influence over Katia. You say that Katia is very fond of her."
"Absolutely devoted."
The princess crimsoned with annoyance. She was already jealous of her daughter's feeling for me.
"It's not natural," she said. "At first they seemed to avoid each other, and I must confess I was glad of it. Though she is only a little girl, I would not answer for anything. You understand me? She has absorbed her bringing up, her habits and perhaps principles from infancy, and I don't understand what the prince sees in her. A thousand times I have suggested sending her to a boarding school."
Madame Léotard attempted to defend me, but the princess had already determined to separate us. Katia was sent for at once, and on arriving downstairs was informed that she would not see me again till the following Sunday, that is, for just a week. I learned all this late in the evening and was horror-stricken. I thought of Katia, and it seemed to me that she would not be able to bear our separation. I was frantic with misery and grief and was taken ill in the night. In the morning the prince came to see me and whispered to me words of hope. The prince did his utmost, but all was in vain. The princess would not alter her intention. Little by little I was reduced to despair. I could hardly breathe for misery. On the morning of the 3rd day, Nastia brought me a note from Katia. Katia wrote a fearful scrawl in pencil.
"I love you. I am sitting with Mama and thinking all the time how I can escape to you. But I shall escape. I have said so, and so I don't cry. Write and tell me how you love me. And I was hugging you in my dreams all night and was very miserable, Niatochka. I am sending you some sweets. Farewell."
I answered in the same style. I spent the day crying over Katia's letter. Madame Léotard worried me with her caresses. In the evening she went to the prince and told him I should certainly be ill for the 3rd time if I did not see Katia, and that she regretted having told the princess. I questioned Nastia about Katia. She told me that Katia was not crying, but was very pale. In the morning Nastia whispered to me,
"Go down to His Excellency's study. Go down by the staircase on the right."
My whole being revived with a presentiment. Breathless with expectation, I ran down and opened the study door. She was not there. Suddenly Katia clutched me from behind and kissed me warmly. Laughter, tears. In a flash Katia tore herself from my arms, clambered on her father, leapt on his shoulders like a squirrel, but, losing her balance, sprang off onto the sofa. The prince fell on the sofa after her. Katia was shedding tears of joy.
"Father, what a good man you are!"
"You madcaps! What has happened to you? What's this friendship? What's this love?"
"Be quiet, father, you know nothing about it."
And we rushed into each other's arms again. I began looking at her more closely. She had grown thinner in 3 days. The red had begun to fade from her little face, and pallor was stealing into its place. I shed tears of grief. At last Nastia knocked, a signal that Katia had been missed and was being asked for. Katia turned deathly pale.
"That's enough, children. We'll meet every day. Goodbye. and may God bless you,"
said the prince. He was touched as he looked at us, but his words did not come true. In the evening the news came from Moscow that little Sasha had fallen ill and was almost on the point of death. The princess decided to set off next day. This happened so suddenly that I knew nothing about it till the moment of saying goodbye to Katya. The prince himself had insisted on our being allowed to say goodbye, and the princess had only reluctantly consented. Katya looked shattered. I ran downstairs, hardly knowing what I was doing, and threw myself on her neck. The travelling coach was already at the door. Katya uttered a shriek when she saw me and sank unconscious. I flew to kiss her. The princess began trying to restore her. At last she came to herself and hugged me again.
"Oh, goodbye, Nyetochka," she said to me suddenly, laughing with an indescribable expression on her face. "Don't mind me. It's nothing. I am not ill. I shall come back in a month. Then we will not part again."
"That's enough," said the princess calmly. "Let us start." But Katya came back once more. She squeezed me convulsively in her arms.
"My life,"
she succeeded in whispering, hugging me.
"Goodbye, till we meet again."
We kissed each other for the last time, and Katya vanished. For a long, long time. 8 years passed before we met again. I have purposely described so minutely this episode of my childhood, Katya's first appearance in my life. But our story is inseparable. Her romance was my romance. It was as though it were fated that I should meet her, that she should find me, and I could not deny myself the pleasure of going back once more in memory into my childhood. Now my story will go more quickly. My life passed all at once in a dead calm, and I seemed only to wake up again when I had reached my 16th year. But a few words of what became of me on the departure of the prince's family to Moscow. I was left with Madame Léotard. A fortnight later, a messenger arrived with the news that their return to Petersburg was postponed indefinitely. As for family reasons, Madame Léotard could not go to Moscow. Her duties in the prince's household were at an end. But she remained in the same family and entered the house of Alexandra Mihalovna, the princess's elder daughter. I have said nothing yet about Alexandra Mihalovna, and indeed I had only seen her once. She was the daughter of the princess by her first husband. The origin and family of the princess was somewhat obscure. Her first husband was a contractor. When the princess married a second time, she did not know what to do with her elder daughter. She could not hope that she could make a brilliant marriage. Her dowry was only a moderate one. At last, 4 years before, they had succeeded in marrying her to a wealthy man of a very decent grade in the service. Alexandra Mihalovna passed into a different circle and saw a different world around her. The princess used to visit her twice a year. The prince, her stepfather, visited her once a week with Katya. But of late the princess had not liked letting Katya go to see her sister, and the prince took her on the sly. Katya adored her sister, but they were a great contrast in character. Alexandra Mihalovna was a woman of 22, quiet, soft and loving. It was as though some secret sorrow, some hidden heartache, had cast a shade of austerity on her lovely features. Gravity and austerity seemed out of keeping with the angelic candour of her face. It was like mourning on a child. One could not look at her without feeling greatly attracted. She was pale, and was said to be inclined to be consumptive when I saw her for the first time. She led a very solitary life, and did not like receiving many guests or paying visits. She was like a nun. She had no children. I remember she came to see Madame Léotard, and coming up to me, kissed me with much feeling. She was accompanied by a lean, rather elderly man. Tears came into his eyes as he looked at me. This was the violinist B.
Alexandra Mihalovna put her arms around me and asked whether I would like to live with her and be her daughter. Looking into her face, I recognized my Katya's sister and hugged her with a dull pain in my heart, which set my whole chest aching, as though someone had once more pronounced over me the word orphan. Then Alexandra Mihalovna showed me a letter from the prince. In it were a few lines addressed to me, and I read them with smothered sobs. The prince sent his blessing, and wished me long life and happiness, and begged me to love his other daughter. Katya wrote me a few lines, too. She wrote to me that she would not now leave her mother. And so, that evening, I passed into another family, into another house, to new people, for a second time tearing my heart away from all that had become so dear that by now had become like my own. I arrived exhausted and lacerated by mental suffering. Now a new story begins.